Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets. He asked them, "And what about you? Who do you say that I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Christ." Jesus ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then Jesus began to teach his disciples, "The human one must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and the legal experts, and be killed, and then, after 3 days, rise from the dead." He said this plainly, but Peter took hold of Jesus and, scolding him, began to correct him. Jesus turned and looked at his disciples, then sternly corrected Peter. "Get behind me, Satan. You are not thinking God's thoughts, but human thoughts." After calling the crowd together with his disciples, Jesus said to them, "All who want to come after me must say no to themselves. Take up their cross and follow me. All who want to save their lives will lose them, but all who lose their lives because of me and because of the good news will save them. Why would people gain the whole world but lose their lives? What will people give in exchange for their lives? Whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this unfaithful and sinful generation, the human one will be ashamed of that person when he comes in the Father's glory with the holy angels." The word of the Lord.
Good morning, church. It's good to see you this morning. Our text for the sermon this morning comes from James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. I'll be reading from the NRSV, but you can find the passage on page 923 of your pew Bible. So read with me. "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with the bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. Or look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature, can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh." This is the word of the Lord. Throughout this whole letter, through the whole epistle of James, James expounds on this theme of what it means to live genuinely as people of faith. It seems that the people he was writing to were really good at professing their faith, at gathering together, at expressing their worship to God, and sometimes living it out in their day-to-day lives. But when real life came around, their lives were often incongruent. Things didn't quite match up. In the first chapter of James, he warns the church about being merely hearers of the word of God rather than doers. And in chapter 2, James expounds the importance of works in the life of faith. He says that faith shouldn't merely be lip service, but our lives have to be transformed by the Spirit, and this should be evident in our actions. And then here in chapter 3, James gets very specific. He warns against the powers and dangers of the tongue, and he calls the church to live in integrity through speech. Before we dive further into this passage, I want us to do some reflecting together. As we reflect, I want you to pay attention to your emotions and what you notice in your body as we remember things. So first, I'd like you to join me in reflecting on a time in your life when someone else's words had a positive impact on you. This could be anyone. It could be a parent or a mentor or a friend, a teacher, a loved one, or it could even be a stranger. Think of a specific example where someone lifted you up with their words. If it's challenging to think of something really specific, just try to think of a person who genuinely lifted you up with their words. Next, I'd like you to do something maybe a little bit more emotionally challenging. Think back to a time in your life when someone said something to you that may have negatively impacted you or hurt you. This could be something either said directly to you or maybe even something you heard indirectly that caused pain or negatively impacted your life or someone else's. As you recalled each of these experiences, did you notice how you felt? Chances are the memories we brought to mind of helpful or hurtful words still resurface the things that we felt when we initially heard them. Depending on the examples you chose, you may also be able to point out the longer-term positive or negative impact that these words had on your life, because words make a mark on us. Before we move on, I want to invite you to one more reflection. Can you think of a time when your own words had a positive impact on someone else? Or can you think of a time when your own words may have had a negative impact on someone else? When I reflect on my own experiences, it often feels easier to come up with the words I regret, unfortunately. Times when my flippant or harsh words cause pain or disconnect or confusion. And unfortunately, this is all too common, right? The challenge of taming the tongue is something that none of us are exempt from. James says, for all of us make many mistakes. And this is exactly why I think we need the message of James 3 this morning. Words matter, and they have power to give life or to destroy life. Speech that aligns with God's heart for the world is a key element of congruence and integrity in the life of the church. Thoughtful speech is really essential to a life of genuine faith. Earlier in this letter, in chapter 1:26, James tells us that pure, genuine, worthwhile religion involves both action that is in line with God's heart for humanity and also speech that is in line with God's heart. In fact, he says that if we think we have the Christian life figured out but we don't keep our tongue in check, we're actually deceiving ourselves and maybe even living a falsely religious life. Wow, those are bold words. This is why our speech is so significant to James. So in chapter 3, James focuses on this issue of the tongue. Before we move on, I want to say just a word about the tone of this passage. James' tone throughout chapter 3 is pretty direct, and as a result, so is this sermon. And I don't want us to be discouraged by this. Though James' tone is harsh, I think it correlates to the seriousness and gravity of this message and the impact our words can have on one another. Sometimes a grave tone can kind of wake us up a little bit. So James tells us quite clearly at the beginning of chapter 3, the tongue has significant power. I love the rich metaphoric language that James uses throughout this whole chapter. He paints a picture of the tongue that's so real and tangible, it's hard for us to miss his weight. James tells us that though the tongue is a small, tiny member of our bodies, it boasts of great exploits. He compares the tongue to a bridle on a horse or a rudder on a ship. Though both of these elements are just a fraction of the size of the whole, they have the power to move the whole horse or steer the whole ship. Not only can they choose the direction to turn the greater body, they can set the entire course for its future. When controlled well, the results of this are really wonderful. But when controlled poorly or not at all, there's also potential for disaster. A ship that's uncontrolled in the presence of strong winds or rough seas can run aground or it can even capsize, right? So even if a ship is being controlled by a rudder, a misguided rudder can send the ship to the wrong place. So also our tongue, it can set the course of our lives. The words we choose have the potential to steer our lives, and I think also the lives of others, towards either flourishing or towards hurt or pain or destruction. The next metaphor James whips out in this passage is that of fire. I want to read just verse 5 and 6 again. He says, "How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell." Something as small as a spark can set the world ablaze. So for those of us who've spent recent summers or this summer in California on the West Coast, forest fires are unfortunately not unfamiliar to us, right? According to the New York Times, 1 million acres of land have burned in California during this year's fire season alone. And in California, almost 95% of wildfires are caused by people. And in the majority of these cases, fires are actually caused accidentally. People don't mean to cause this harm, but it happens. And we've seen firsthand how wide the devastation of fire can be, right? Many of us know friends or family who've been really personally impacted by the devastation of forest fires. Something that starts so small, so very tiny, just a little spark, can have such an impact on lives. Like James says, how great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. Now, fire isn't always destructive, right? But it is always dangerous. It has to be taken care of. Brené Brown speaks of fire like this. She says, "You can use it to keep yourself warm and nourished, or you can burn down the barn." Yeah, fire can bring great good to the world, and it does. It gives us warmth and light and sustenance, but it can also bring great harm or even destruction if it's uncontrolled. So also the tongue. So we have to be careful, right? We have to be careful with our speech. James warns us of the untamable nature of the tongue. Though fire can be mastered and wild animals can be tamed, he tells us that no one can tame the tongue. And when I first read this, my gut reaction is, well, of course I can. I control what I say, right? I control what I don't say or how I use my words. But then I really stopped to consider the reality of my life or the reality of our world, just like we did in that reflection a few minutes ago, and I realized this isn't entirely true. As a whole, we seem to have done a little bit better job of taming animals than taming our tongues, I think. What a mess we create with our untamed speech. When I stop and reflect on my own life and actions, I realize how far I am from having a tame tongue. Memories quickly come to mind of times I've said words in anger or in spite, or perhaps out of like my own fear or bitterness or hurt. And I bet you can all relate to that. Even on the best of days, a slip of the tongue can remind us how deeply in need of God's transformative grace we are. And this is exactly what James is getting at. Jesus says in the Gospels, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Though we may profess faith and truly seek to honor and love God, our speech will quickly show us the places where we lack congruence or integrity, the places that are still in need of more of God's restoration, more of God's good work. Back in James, in verse 8, he compares the tongue to a deadly poison. I think this is telling. Poison is so dangerous because it can be lethal, right? It's also really sneaky. It can make that which appears good or harmless actually destructive. The tongue acts as poison when it hides evil under the guise of good. And I would argue that this is also one way to interpret taking the Lord's name in vain, doing things under the cover of religion or in the name of God in word that really undermine God's work in the world. An untamed tongue can be subtle. It isn't necessarily demonstrated through crass talk or blatantly speaking against the word of God, the things we think of when we think of outlandish untamed tongues. The danger of the poison can also be in subtle comments, in gossip, negativity, degrading speech, but it can also be sneaky, I think, and I think it can even be unintentional at times. Sometimes we don't recognize the negative impact of our words. Sometimes our own lack of self-awareness keeps us from realizing the harm that we're causing. Remember, throughout this whole letter, this whole epistle of James, James is trying to counteract this larger problem, a people of God who profess faith, but whose actions and speech say otherwise. This is why James focuses so specifically on the tongue and on our speech here. There's so much room for inconsistency and tripping and dissonance, for even appealing words to maybe undermine the truth. So James exhorts us to live lives of integrity, wholly devoted to God, pure and genuine, not double-minded. I'm going to reread verses 9 through 12 because this is really, I think, part of the core of James' message here. It packs a punch, and I think it poses some really important questions for us. And as I read, please don't receive these words as full of shame and guilt, but an invitation to this life with God, an invitation to reflection and a genuine life of faith. So verse 9, with our tongue we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. James says, my brothers and sisters, this ought not be so. I can hear like this heartbreak in James' words as he's talking to the church, and I feel it for us too. I feel it for our world. We find it so natural to speak words of praise and blessing in our worship of God, but sometimes with the same tongue or even the same breath, we curse those who are made in the image of God, the imago Dei, our own brothers and sisters in this world. By cursing those made in the likeness of God, I think we fail to faithfully represent the image of God in ourselves too. I wish it was more difficult for me to think of examples of this reality, but it's not. The truth is, the North American church seems all too familiar with this problem right now. A quick look at our current political climate and the language surrounding it will reveal the ugly truth. We're experts at double-mindedness, at blessing and cursing our brothers and sisters, of spewing both love and hate, both fresh and brackish water. If you're on social media at all, it probably doesn't take you very long to find fiery comments unleashed against one group of people or another, or one party or another, or one ethnicity or another. The church isn't exempt from this problem either, and I think it's setting the world ablaze. Our culture is latching onto this space of division and really harsh talk. I'm sure you've seen it or experienced it. Words of the tongue, blessing and cursing, quick, hurtful words. Tongues that are unbridled. But James calls us here, those who seek to live out a genuine faith in God, to something different, to a life of consistency and integrity, of great care for the words that we use, to graciousness and tenderness and humility and boldness, but not to poison, not to cursing, and not to ingenuine faith. We have an opportunity to be a countercultural voice in the world, I think, to resist this cultural narrative that says you have to stand on one side and speak fiery words towards the other, and instead speak with gentleness, listen with kindness, and bring dignity to all, even those we might disagree with. Doing this well demands that we grow in our own self-awareness, both as individuals and as a community, as a people of God. It also demands that we take a good, hard look at the congruence of our own words and hearts. Are we aware of our words? Do we think about the impact that they have on us and on those around us? Are our words true to the faith we profess, or are we resembling springs that maybe spout forth both fresh and brackish water, both blessing and cursing in our speech? Something that I love about Foothill Community Church is the way that this community does live genuinely. I think James' theme of integrity and genuine faith is something that I see here, something that I experience here, and something that I have the opportunity to get in on with you here. Whether it's caring for those in need in our community or coming alongside the sick or welcoming strangers, I see that here. I think we have an opportunity, friends. I think we have a specific opportunity in this season to be a prophetic voice in the way that we choose to use our words and tame our tongues. God knows we need the help of the Spirit in this endeavor, but I truly believe that we can use the power of our words to make a new way forward, a gospel life, one out of love and gentleness and respect. With our fiery tongues, I pray that we can nourish and support and sustain one another rather than contribute to this fiery blaze. Thoughtful speech is essential to a life of genuine faith. We're going to take a few moments to reflect on these words and on this passage and what God is stirring up in us. But I want to leave you with these words, this prayer from Psalm 19:14. May the words of our mouths and the meditations of all our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer.